Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. This show is sponsored by Dixon's Chemist, who are the experts in LDN and associated treatments in the UK. Dixon's Chemist are the most cost-effective for LDN in all forms within the UK and Europe, maintaining safety standards far in excess of what is required. Why would you choose to get your LDN from anywhere else? Call 0141 404 6545 today to speak to their LDN experts. Today my guest is Dr. Melissa Coates from Arizona in the US. She's a naturopathic oncologist. Thank you for joining us today, Melissa.
Thank you for having me.
Well, could you just give us an idea of your background, first of all, please?
Sure. Initially, growing up, I always knew I wanted to be a physician, I think, or in medicine. And so when I went off to college, and I went to school far away from home in Lynchburg, Virginia, at Randolph-Macon Women's College, and I focused on biology. And then after that, I didn't exactly know what part of medicine I wanted to do, so I decided to get a master's in bioethics while I was deciding. And I, at the same time when I discovered bioethics, I stumbled across naturopathic medicine. And once I read the philosophy and what it was all about, I knew that was where I needed to be. Mm-hmm. And so once I finished my master's at Midwestern University, I went on to the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine, which was in Tempe, Arizona, and I didn't even realize it, in my native state. And so I learned all about naturopathic medicine and went on to school there. And ever since, here I am.
Wow. And when were you first introduced to LDN?
I believe my first introduction was through my mentor and colleague, Dr. Daniel Rubin. He had co-wrote an article, I think back in 2006, about low-dose naltrexone for its use with pancreatic cancer. And Dr. Berkson, who uses it a lot at his clinic where he does a lot of hepatitis C treatment, also was very interesting to me. So I learned a lot from both of them. And from then on, I've been doing more and more research and just using it in a multitude of ways with different types of things beyond cancer. But cancer is obviously one of the bigger ones that we focus on here at our clinic.
Mm-hmm. Could you give us an idea of your protocols for treating cancer patients and which cancers you've actually treated with LDN?
Sure. Probably one of the bigger ones is we typically put people on it who have breast and colon and pancreatic cancer. Those are some that we definitely do, but we know there's some efficacy with ovarian and neuroblastoma and glioblastoma and even squamous cell carcinoma. So pretty much because of the natural killer cell and the immune stimulation that it gives, we've found it is a very nice adjunctive thing to add on to most treatment protocols. So we utilize it quite often, starting usually with a lower dose, depending on the sensitivity of the patient, maybe 1.5, all the way up to 4.5 milligrams, depending on what's going on, and making sure that we're not conflicting with any pain medication use, of course, if the patient's had surgery or things like that. We've also, me particularly in the clinic, like to use it for other things as well. One of my very first patients, well, actually wasn't an oncology patient that I utilized it in, was a person who had had undiagnosed celiac for 25 years, and she was, her gastrointestinal system was just a giant mess, and she was miserable, and it was one of the things that I decided to introduce to kind of calm her autoimmune issues that were going on, including her thyroid, and it really seemed to calm her gut, and she said it was like a miracle to her. And we even tested going off of it briefly to see if that was truly what was happening, and it was for sure definitely the low-dose naltrexone that was helping calm things for her. And so that was one of my first introductions to the power of it, and from then on I've been utilizing it in many ways since.
Mm-hmm. And part of the protocol? I mean, what other therapies do you use alongside of LDN?
Oh, in conjunction?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. We utilize here in Arizona, we have the ability to give IV nutrients. So we use IV alpha-lipoic acid alongside the LDN. Sometimes it's vitamin C IV. We utilize other supplements as well, just that to focus on different parts of what the person needs as far as support if they're during chemotherapy or radiation or other treatments they may have going on. We also utilize sometimes another natural killer cell stimulator, which is mistletoe, but we only give that in a sub-Q injection versus IV here in Arizona. So there's often a combination of things that utilize with the LDN to help the patient get the best for their immune system and whatever else mm-hmm. they're having.
Do you use CBD?
In Arizona, we can help patients get their medical marijuana evaluation so that they can get a card to utilize CBD, and yes, we have used that as well.
Mm-hmm.
We find it to be a great anti-inflammatory agent and really help with side effects of chemo. That's been one of the greatest gifts that some patients have gotten when their anti-nausea medications don't seem to work, so we do utilize CBD quite
mm-hmm.
often.
Mm-hmm. And I'm told that it works in conjunction with LDN very well.
Yes, and oftentimes most of those patients are already on LDN, so mm-hmm. it's definitely a good part of the mix. We definitely like to make a treatment plan very individualized to each patient, so there's often quite a multitude of things going on at once, whether it's CBD, LDN, IV, you know, a diet plan, whatever it is, we mm-hmm. like to bring it all together for them so that they can feel their best.
And you mentioned diet plan there. Of course, with cancer, sugar is a no-no. I mean, what kind of a diet do you suggest patients follow?
A lot of our suggestions as far as diet are either to focus on very anti-inflammatory or a Mediterranean-style diet. The ketogenic diet is obviously big news right now. It's everywhere, so that is definitely utilized depending on if the patient's in a good place to do that or not. If they're in a very cachectic state or their weight is very low, we may or may not utilize that, but if they're in a place where it looks like they would benefit greatly from the anti-inflammatory effect of being on the ketogenic diet, we definitely introduce that. It's definitely a big part of our consults with patients is spending a lot of time on diet because we believe food is one of the greatest medicines you can put in your body if you're utilizing it properly.
Exactly. And what's the age range of the patients that you treat?
In our clinic, Dr. Rubin sees pediatric patients, so we have little tiny babies all the way up to, I think one of our patients right now that we have that I believe is also on LDN is 89. So we have quite the age range going on here in our clinic. I would say the majority of my patients range in their mid-20s to like in the 70s and 80s. So we have quite the group.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And you were saying that you treated the lady with celiac disease. Have you treated any other autoimmune diseases?
Yes. Some of the ones that I've seen some benefit are with, I have a few patients who have lupus who have seen some benefit. Rheumatoid arthritis sometimes has seen definitely some help in calming some of that. A lot of Crohn's and colitis. I definitely really see a lot of benefit with LDN. When you bring in GI issues that are very inflammatory and sometimes immune-mediated, so it's definitely been helpful. I also have utilized it quite often with Hashimoto's thyroiditis to kind of calm the thyroid antibodies, and they seem to note that their thyroid works more efficiently, and we see better numbers on labs when they're on the LDN and less need for medication, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. So the patients that, you know, are on LDN for thyroid, do you taper it up slowly? What is your protocol for that?
The patients that I have recently put in, I've been able to start most of them at 3 milligrams, and I haven't really had to taper them per se, up or down. Sometimes we just watch the numbers and kind of see how they're feeling, and I may start them at 3 and just see, you know, check in with me. How are you feeling? Do you feel like that's too much, too little? But it hasn't seemed to cause any major side effects, which is why I love using it so much, because most people have a great response. Mm-hmm. I forgot about one case that I specifically wanted to tell you about. I have two patients that have an autoimmune hepatitis that has been very difficult for them to wean off their steroids. And we have been utilizing LDN probably for the last year to help them wean, and their numbers as far as their liver markers, their AST and ALT, have definitely decreased significantly since starting the low-dose naltrexone and have finally been able to taper to a much lower dose of their steroids, which is wonderful because they had gotten to a low dose before without the LDN, and then their numbers went crazy. And so we found that using the LDN has made them much more successful, and they're very excited about that.
Mm. Sometimes with going back to thyroid, thyroid medication has to be reduced when they are on LDN.
Oh, yes, definitely that. I think I was confused in talking about the LDN dose. But yes, you definitely, because the thyroid becomes more efficient with the use of the LDN, they definitely need less medication, which is wonderful. So I usually check thyroid labs when I'm changing things up every 4 to 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so definitely I've had many patients have to reduce their dose because of the LDN, which has been great.
Mm, okay. So when a patient comes to see you, let's just say a cancer patient, how do you go about putting that plan together? What is the procedure you follow?
When we meet, we initially have at least an hour consultation where we have really extensive forms that they fill out ahead of time so that I have a really good understanding of their history, and we try to request records so we're already in the know of what's going on so that we can spend a lot of time talking with each other about goals and where they want to be. And while we're in consult, we actually type up a protocol so that they leave with a piece of paper that says what labs they're going to get, what treatment plans that we, or treatment options we are interested in doing, whether that's IV or starting low-dose naltrexone or some supplements. And then we make sure that there's a clear understanding on, you know, if we need to check in and get a diet diary or what changes should be made immediately. So they leave with that protocol in their hands so that they feel like not only did we meet and get a good understanding of what's going on, but we have a plan in action that first day, which I think is very powerful in making a patient feel empowered about, you know, taking control of their health.
Yeah.
And we also kind of keep updating that protocol each time we meet so that if a supplement doesn't work out or we need to add something, they know exactly what's going on and can keep track, which is helpful to everybody involved.
I was, after speaking to Dr. Birx, and he told me that alpha lipoic acid is to be taken intravenously, that it wasn't as effective in tablet form. And the other day somebody was telling me that no, the tablet form is just as well as the the intravenous. So I'm now confused. Has it changed?
What is our take on that?
Yeah, what's your take on it exactly?
My understanding is still that the IV is probably very important because, you know, you're bypassing the GI and you're getting full absorption, whereas orally you'd have to take a lot more, which obviously the doses are different. The IV amount we go up to is about 600 milligrams, whereas orally we're giving someone up to 1,200 milligrams a day typically.
Mm-hmm.
We use both. So when they're not here, they're on it orally, and then when they're in office, they don't need to take their oral dose that day because they're getting the IV version of it. But I would say probably from a strength perspective, and I'll have to check the latest studies, I guess, now that you say that, but my understanding from Dr. Birxen and his protocol that I've been utilizing for a number of years now, that the IV seems to be pretty vital.
Yes, I mean, that's what he told me. But I just thought maybe my
judgment.
I thought perhaps my knowledge was out of date, so I just wanted to check
that. No, I don't think
that.
So. We haven't changed our protocols yet. So
okay.
And I know that when I can't get numbers to move from oral dosages of things, I definitely bring in the IV protocols, and that seems to make a difference.
Mm. What about vitamin C taken intravenously? Is that really effective that way?
For for absorption issues and things like that? I would say yes, because from a standpoint of orally, most people can't handle maybe roughly above 6 to 8 grams because it causes a lot of GI distress, even if it's buffered and, you know, okay for the GI. Whereas IV, we give people up to 100 grams, which is way past what anyone could take orally. And so we know that that creates a different type of stress on the cells that can help with reducing vascular endothelial growth factor and other inflammatory markers related to cancer. So that's why we utilize it IV.
And if you read about vitamin C, and it talks about water soluble, fat soluble, and it flushing out of your system if you take too much. Mm-hmm. Can you take too much intravenously?
I think it is pretty much individualized as well. Some people can't handle certain doses. There are some patients that feel great at 40 grams and others that can take 100 grams and feel just as great. So it kind of depends on the person. There are tests to check also where their plasma level of vitamin C are. Or is that? And so that's something that we have utilized in the past. And then based on our clinical knowledge of just using it for a long time, we have kind of figured out where people tend to do well. You definitely, it doesn't stay in you forever. It is leaving the body, and there's a lot that's going to be going through the kidneys and out, you know, being voided out. But for the time that it is in the body and what it's doing to the cells, and if you come on a fairly regular basis, you are creating an environment that is, you know, less available for cancer to grow. So you're creating an environment that is not what they will utilize, and so that's why we use it so often. We also use the alpha lipoic acid because it's a powerful antioxidant, and then some of the other nutrients that are out there too.
A few years ago, I had an operation, and I came to, and I was in quite a bit of pain. And they gave me intravenous paracetamol. And I was thinking to myself, the pain was quite bad, thinking, why are they giving me paracetamol? You know, that's not going to do any good. And it worked. I was absolutely amazed. I thought, paracetamol, you know, isn't very strong. But apparently it's stronger if it's taken intravenously.
Intravenously because it's not having to go through the metabolism through the liver and everything. It just goes right in.
I was surprised at that. So vitamins, minerals and supplements, do you have any favorite ones? I mean, obviously it's individually tailored to the person.
Yeah.
But, you know, on a whole, what would you say?
We utilize a lot of, in the oncology world, things that basically kind of change the terrain for cancer. So one of the things that I've utilized a lot is modified citrus pectin, which is something that targets galectin-3, which galectin-3 basically kind of can cloak cancer cells or make inflammation and fibrosis of your body. And so by lowering that, you allow protection of good healthy cells and keeping other tissues healthy. So for example, a woman with breast cancer, if she has it in one breast, you want to try and protect the other breast so that we found that this can be helpful. Also, if she's going to be having surgery or a biopsy, having this on board can kind of help spread, help prevent spread of the other rogue cells possibly in studies. That's what's been confirmed. So it's something that we've utilized a lot. Mushrooms, you know, reishi, maitake, a whole bunch of different ones, Coriolis mushroom, to help, you know, your white blood cells, keep your immune system healthy. So that's a big one that we use. And then things that target vascular endothelial growth factor, which is basically kind of a signal for angiogenesis or blood vessels to grow around a tumor. And so there's numerous things that target that, from Hinokio, which is a magnolia extract. There's other herbs as well that do that. So, and obviously vitamin C. And then there's some thought that, you know, if you stimulate things like the natural killer cell function with low-dose naltrexone, that you may be inhibiting some of those other pathways in a roundabout way. So that's why it's a combination of things. Quercetin, resveratrol, there's so many. And obviously curcumin is a huge one, or, you know, the curcuminoids, which is the active constituent found in turmeric. So there's a lot. Yes. And that's why we constantly are, you know, trying to throw different curveballs at the immune system to help people fight cancer. And so that's why we utilize so many different things, because if you just use one agent, obviously the immune system and the cancer is going to figure that way around it. And so we want to make sure that we help.
Do probiotics play a role in your protocols?
Oh, yes, definitely. The GI health and having a really good balanced flora of good bugs in the body is definitely key. I do also a little bit of, when I'm not focusing on cancer, some mental health, and I really do believe in the gut-brain connection and helping, you know, if your gut is unhealthy, so will your brain. Mm-hmm. And so making sure that you have good flora can definitely help people's mood and their anxiety and stress responses. It's pretty amazing. So I love probiotics and what they can do.
I was looking at probiotics, and you start off with what I would call a reasonably priced product to one that is like five times as expensive. And I'd gone the first time I was studying it, I went into a store. So I was reading the labels, you know, this one has that many million and this one has got different strains in it.
Mm-hmm.
I was just lost. I didn't know what it was I should be buying, which was the best. Is it a case of the more money you spend, the better the product you're getting? Or should you be looking deeper than just the price you're paying?
I think it's probably a combination of both. Hopefully the more expensive products are good. If not, then they're just, you know, gouging you. But the main thing for us is it's good to get a variety of strains. So not just Acidophilus always, you know, you want to make sure you're getting Lactobacillus and Bifidobacterium, and you want multiple strains of those types of bacteria, or Saccharomyces boulardii, you know, depending on what you're trying to work with the gut. So, you know, multiple strains. Also, we're a big fan of billions versus millions, because you don't know how much is actually lost or killed off in your absorption and what your stomach acid is doing to those bugs, depending on how they're put into a capsule or a pearl or if it's a powder. There's always some that aren't going to make it. So the more the merrier, in the fact that you'll, you know, hopefully be colonizing the gut with some good stuff. And also I always tell people to rotate brands, you know, and also research the brand and make sure that however they have them, they can prove that when they get their product on the shelf, that those bugs are still alive in there if they're supposed to be, and not just, you know, been heat shocked in transit and are no longer anything other than a pill filled with nothing. So it may be that is cost prohibitive or not, but normally most of the products that are pretty good are similar in price. I think that there's some that are really high in the billions that are intensive protocols that you may only be doing for a week or two that may be more costly. It just kind of depends, which is why we recommend you usually see someone who has done the research versus just buying a product at the grocery store that's just been sitting on the shelf for you have no idea how long. And so it's good to kind of find that out before you spend the money and then are disappointed.
Mm. What about vitamin D?
Oh, vitamin D is another one. Yes. It depends also kind of on the person's absorption. Sometimes I've switched patients from a capsule form to a liquid form and had them hold it under their tongue because they didn't seem to be getting anything from their capsule, and that could be a reflection of the way they absorb through their GI, or if it needs to be more sublingual in their case. And usually the dose probably needs to be higher than they thought it needed to be, based on their labs. You know, if someone's our range here, for example, one of the labs we use, I think the range is 30 to 100, and we like to see people between 60 and 80. And so that may take them taking 10,000 units a day for a while, and then they may be able to ramp back, or they may have to take more than that depending on their absorption status. Mm-hmm. But you kind of have to play with that individually for the patient and on what seems to work for them. And yeah, there's a lot of different brands on the market. Mm. So,
What about omega-3s? Do they play this an is important enough, part?
Yes. The key thing with omega-3s for me is making sure that it's a very pure product, that it's not fish that are in a farm lot being fed dog food or something horrible like that. They need to be deep sea cold water fish, you know, hopefully sustainably raised, And then the capsules themselves, when you're looking at it, you want to make sure that they're fresh, so that hopefully the product has some sort of a date on it that tells you that those haven't been sitting and becoming rancid. And the key also is to look at the EPA and DHA content. So on the back of omega-3, if it's fish oil, you flip it around, it'll typically show you EPA and DHA, and you want that to add up to over 1,000 milligrams within just one or two capsules versus having to take 10 capsules, you know, to get there, because otherwise you're not getting the benefit of the anti-inflammatory effect, the good healthy, you know, cholesterol effect and everything else that goes along with it.
I was talking to a nutritionist a few years ago now, and she was saying the recommended dose of the EPA and DPA, is it?
DHA.
DHA. Mm-hmm. If you had an inferior product, they usually have vitamin A in them. And the more tablets you take, the more vitamin A you're taking. And you can overdose on the vitamin A. And she was saying, yeah, you've really got to make sure it's a pure product.
Yeah, you got to read the label for sure, yes.
Without the vitamin A.
Yeah, that could be bad, and that will give you a nasty headache and make you not feel good at all. Mm. But the one I believe that we carry here, I don't even think it mentions vitamin A, so it's definitely, I'd have to check. But as far as I know, it's just really focused on the omegas aspect of it.
Yes. And what about people who are vegans? Can you take flaxseed oil to the same
you can do
issue?
Yeah, you could do flax or chia seeds. Also just eating healthy oils like avocado oil, olive oil, coconut oil. You know, there's a lot of different ways to get in omega fatty acids that do not require necessarily a fish or krill.
I was reading the other day an article on coconut oil where they were saying that previous research was incorrect and it wasn't as healthy as they made out. What is your stance on that?
I don't think it's the healthiest oil, definitely, but I still see some benefit in using it, particularly the medium-chain triglycerides that come from coconut oil, or we use MCT oil sometimes instead of just coconut. But if someone is just occasionally throwing a little bit of coconut oil in their smoothie, I haven't seen it detrimentally affect them. Mm. And I've seen some good studies with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's research that it helps the brain. So the MCT from coconut oil is helpful. I think it's also a matter of where you're getting it. You know, if it's this big tub of coconut oil from a big box store, that may not be great versus actually getting a small organic coconut oil, you know, might be a better option. But again, with the ketogenic diet, they often mention using MCT oil to help supplement your fat content. And that's been a very pure product, and it usually doesn't have a coconut taste, but it's from coconuts. So people can use that if they don't like the coconut flavor. And it's nice because if you're needing to gain weight, it's a good way to add 100 calories or more to a meal.
No, you don't need to gain any.
Yeah, most people are not looking for that, but sometimes in the oncology world, we need to help people get more out of their meals. And because that doesn't have a taste like coconut oil, it's helpful. But I don't think coconut oil is horrible, but I definitely don't recommend it to be someone's only source of fat, for sure, and definitely not cooking with it at high heat, because that definitely, it is not a oil that cooks well at high heat. It will actually oxidize it and make it an unhealthy thing. So we usually recommend people use avocado oil for that.
Wonderful. Well, our half an hour's up. It's gone very quickly. So, you know, this was Dr. Melissa Coates, and thank you so much. Before we go, can you tell people how they can contact you?
Yes, you can contact us through our website at www.listenandcare.com. It's all spelled out, listenandcare.com. Or you can give us a call at 480-990-1111.
Thank you
very
much.
And you can even have a 10-minute free consultation if you like.
Oh, wow. There we are. Nothing to lose and everything to gain. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
This show is sponsored by Dixon's Chemist, who are the experts in LDN and associated treatments in the UK. Dixon's Chemists are the most cost-effective for LDN in all forms within the UK and Europe, maintaining safety standards far in excess of what is required. Why would you choose to get your LDN from anywhere else? Call 0141 404 6545 today to speak to their LDN experts. Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.